Hi, I'm Jerry Barmash, and this is Here Now the News. COVID restrictions are easing. More people are getting the vaccine, but it's not coming soon enough to help the movie industry. The Academy Awards is delaying its annual spectacle by 2 months, but the show must go on. Whether viewers will notice is another story. I'll discuss that and a look at this season's nominations with renowned film critic Pete Hammond, who is an awards columnist for Deadline.com.
When they had the Golden Globes, that would have been the night that the Oscars would have actually been.
We would have been done with it.
So, I mean, right off the bat, the Oscars have been on a slide of late as far as the ratings. And now we've got with the pandemic, and I don't even know how they're going to be presenting it. Every time there's a different awards, they always try to reinvent the wheel, how they're going to be doing these somewhat virtual or partial virtual and people in the audience. Do you think this helps for viewership?
No. I don't. I think they know it's going to break records for them in terms of low ratings. It's very clear. You know, the Golden Globes were down 62%. The Critics' Choice Awards, of which I'm a part of that, was down about 75%. And these are telecasts in terms of ratings. The Grammys were down 53%. And that was not a Zoom show. That was a performance show, you know, pretty close to what the Grammys normally are without that excited audience and that sort of thing. It affected the Grammys in that way. I thought they did a good job. One of the producers of the Grammys is also a producer of the Oscar show this year. And I think they're going to adopt some of the same ideas. So the Oscars won't be, they know it can't be another Zoom meeting. So it's going to be live with audience, with the nominees there, most likely all of them at the Union Station in downtown L.A. And then I think they're going to use the Dolby for performance, use that stage. They can move sets in and out. They don't have to worry about having it look half empty with the audience, you know, just of nominees there. So I think that's the plan, and it should be interesting. The Oscars need to be used this year as a startup for the industry again, for movie going, for theaters opening again. And it has a global impact in that way. So if they don't get ratings, they can serve a service here in showing what movies mean to people and remind us of that. And I think it's perfectly situated on April 25th. To do that, as it turns out. So,
yeah, I mean, and the other thing is with the Oscars, sure, it's fashion and sure, it's stars, but it's also interest in those movies to see how well they've done. And I think that's also going to hurt because how many people have seen these movies? I mean, almost everything has been virtual streaming, and not everyone has all of, like, I have Netflix and I haven't invested in Amazon and Hulu and I don't know, YouTube or you know, if there's others. So I think that may be an issue, that people are not going to the theaters. Most theaters are not open. And even if they are, I guess they're not going yet to the theaters. So I think that may be a problem as well to get people to watch, right?
Well, the problem with the theaters is there's no movies really that are being turned out by the studios. They postponed their big blockbuster tentpole, as they say in the business, releases, moved even some of these so-called Oscar movies like West Side Story, In the Heights, these kinds of films out of this year into next year if those directors didn't want it. But what you have is essentially a streaming Oscars, and that's what we're dealing with in watching these films, and the Academy is too. You're absolutely right. The movies matter when it comes to ratings. You know, a Lord of the Rings year, a Black Panther year, they get big numbers for the Oscars. There's interest in them. Here, they don't know what Mank is or really care about a black and white movie about movie making in the 40s, as good as that movie is. And Nomadland, do they really care about Frances McDormand, you know, packing boxes at Amazon and wandering the Southwest from a Chinese director? Do they care about any of these movies really compared to what the Oscars used to be, this one kind of gathering point for movie lovers, you know, that they couldn't get? Now it's so fractured and you can see movies in different ways. you know, on your phone, on your TV set here and there. And, you know, it doesn't have the magic or the, you know, exclusivity that we're seeing these movie stars here at the Oscars. We see them every day. And also, there's, even in a good year, there's all these other award shows that lead up to it. And by that time, by the time the Oscars come around, you've heard the speech. You know who's going to win. You've heard it over and over again from the Golden Globes and on and on. So it's a problem. That's why they know they're not going to get blockbuster ratings here. They know they're going to have the lowest ratings of all time. Jimmy Kimmel, when he did the Emmys, which I thought was a terrific show, they were really inventive with that and everything in September.
Right.
I interviewed him and he predicted, he said, this is going to be the lowest ratings Emmys ever. I know it. And that had nothing to do with the quality of the show they were putting on. It just was interest in this kind of thing going on now when there are bigger issues at hand and, you know, Hollywood ain't what it used to be.
I'm also pleased to welcome Jordan Hoffman to the podcast. Jordan is a New York-based film critic who writes for multiple outlets, including Vanity Fair and The Guardian.
It's a hard thing. I mean, award shows in general are becoming less and less watched. I mean, because they can be long and boring, and you are, you know, the curiosity level is still there, what won, but it's a very easy thing to check your phone the next morning and see, you know, get the clips that are good.
Right.
It's like Saturday Night Live. You want to stay up for Saturday Night Live, or do you want to wake up the next morning and somebody else has already stripped out the three good sketches and you can miss everything else? So, yeah, there's that in general with the Oscars. And they have not been doing the best job in recent years connecting with the modern audience. They are a little bit kind of stuffy. And then this pandemic year was a mess. I mean, you know, there was talk of, do you even continue to do it this year because the movies were closed? And, you know, I vote in a group called the New York Film Critics Circle, which is the oldest award-giving body of anything anywhere for movies. And I haven't been there since the beginning. I haven't been there since 1933. But we had to decide, do we do what the Oscars are going to do? Or do we say, no, we're going to just give 2020 will be 2020 and we're going to vote on 2020 movies? Or are we going to expand it? And the Oscars, as we'll get to, their choices included things up to late February. And we decided, no, just make 2020 2020. So our picks and the Oscar picks, there are some differences in eligibility. You know, it's one of these things where there's no, you know, the whole year has an asterisk to it. You know, there's right. No right answer. And also, ultimately, does it really matter? This is entertainment. You know, it's not, we're not talking about getting the vaccine out to the right people. We're not talking about a land war somewhere. We're talking about movies and giving a statue to an actor. So anybody who takes it too seriously needs to calm down a little bit.
Asterisk notwithstanding, many performances stood out, even if the masses didn't get to see them. The Best Actress category is one of the deepest. Among the contenders, Golden Globe winner Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Carrie Mulligan for Promising Young Woman, and Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
I'll give you a scoop, Jerry, and make my prediction.
Okay.
Carrie Mulligan. Carrie Mulligan in Promising Young Woman. And here, yeah, Andra Day won the Golden Globe. The Golden Globes are under tremendous criticism right now. So the value of winning that Globe in this year in particular is negligible. But nevertheless, she did win. She's terrific in that film. It's great. It's its only nomination, which means that the Academy at large, and remember, in the finals, everybody in the Academy, sound designers, production designers, everybody votes for everything. So it's not like the nominations where just your branch, just the actors are voting. And they may have seen the Billie Holiday film. I don't know that the whole Academy has a reason to, beyond Andra Day's performance, to check it out, because there are no other nominations. Promising Young Woman is, in terms of what you need to win Oscars traditionally, is one of two films that has all the key nominations you need. And the other one is Nomadland, which has won everything leading up to the Oscars. So that's pretty impressive right there, which means they're seeing the movie, which means they'll see Carrie Mulligan, which means she's going to win.
I think Carrie Mulligan is a lock for Best Actress because it's a very unusual film. It's a little too unusual to win Best Picture. but it's a good performance. And Carey Mulligan's been around a long time. She's been nominated before and hasn't won. So if you're a betting man, I would bet on her for Best Actress.
As for the male lead acting category, there are powerhouse roles as well, but there is also another likely lock.
Chadwick Boseman is great. I think he would have won anyway. The fact that he died in the middle of the year, suddenly in this year, when there was so much emotion, and you know the movie Black Panther meant so much to the Black community, and then this year with the racial unrest, I think there's never been a bigger lock in the history of Oscar prediction than Chadwick Boseman. If he doesn't win, then they should just all quit. They should all just walk off stage.
I do think Chadwick Boseman is going to win in a walk easily for Best Actor. That one doesn't seem to be any kind of contest in terms of what we think is going to happen.
It would seem, and not to be insensitive, because I saw that was one of the movies that was on Netflix, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. Is this a situation where if he didn't die, he wouldn't be, I don't know if he'd be up, or he wouldn't be the favorite to win?
I think he'd be up for the award. He'd never been nominated before. He's been sensational playing these iconic real-life characters from James Brown to Jackie Robinson to Thurgood Marshall, and of course Black Panther, you know, took him to the stratosphere. He was more than overdue to get recognition from the Academy. This performance allowed that to happen. So I think he would have been nominated. I don't think he would have been the runaway favorite that he is had he tragically not died.
The Academy has been criticized in recent years for its lack of inclusion, but not in 2021.
Oscars so white just, you know, blindsided them in 2015. And 2016, they did it 2 years in a row. Congratulations there. But if you don't have the movies to vote for, what are you going to do? And they almost did it again last year. You know, Cynthia Erivo saved the day for them. But this year, 9 of the 20 acting nominations are people of color. Asian Americans, Pakistani, Muslim. Of course, 6 of them are Black. These are big numbers in any year. And so the Academy clearly had the goods to look at and to nominate this year. So the industry was coming into it, providing these movies and these opportunities. And the Academy didn't embarrass themselves by not taking it.
Diversity extends behind the camera for a pair of films.
A wonderful, probably my favorite. It's called Minari. And this was a little bit controversial because the Golden Globe Awards gave it the Best Foreign Language Film Award, even though the movie is made by Americans and shot in America, but it is predominantly in Korean. It's set in the 1980s. It's the guy who wrote it and directed it, this fellow named Lee Isaac Chung. And he, it's sort of his, you know, coming of age tale. It's about being an immigrant family in the Midwest. I want to say Iowa. There's certainly a lot of corn in this movie. Iowa or Indiana or something like that. And it's a totally universal story. I mean, although my grandparents were on my mother's side were Russian Jewish immigrants, they were farmers in Southern Jersey. And when I watched this film, I thought of them. I didn't think of, you know, I saw the connection between South Koreans in 1980 with their story from decades earlier from a whole other point of view. It's a great, great movie. The one that's likely to win is called Nomadland. This one is on Hulu. Very, very good movie. It's almost documentary in style. Frances McDormand, very well-known actress, she's the lead. And there's another actor named David Strathairn in it. But everybody else in the movie kind of plays themselves. You know, the director went out in the American West, very interesting woman by the name of Chloe Zhao. She was the director, and met these people who live in their vans, and they sort of live in these communal villages, and they're nomads. They go where the work is. They pick beets in the summer. They work for Amazon in the around Christmas time. They load your boxes, and they make a life. And it's a film that is, you know, upsetting, because these are people who are struggling financially, but also very beautiful. You know, they have a different lifestyle than we have. And of course it's shot in Arizona, in Utah, in South Dakota, and outdoors. And The director really has an eye. So it's a beautiful movie, one that should have been seen in a movie theater. Of course, right. That didn't happen this year.
Does that hurt it for like people watching it at home, as the critics or the Academy members?
Anybody who has a half a mind watching this movie and says, wow, I wish I was in a theater. You know, like you can make the adjustment in your head. I mean, it still looks great. If you've got a nice 4K TV, it's still going to look nice, you know, right. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But it's meant to be seen in a theater, and it didn't happen. So it's unfortunate.
Is that the film to beat?
Yeah. I've resisted it. I watched it. You know, the problem with a movie like Nomadland, where you have to watch it on your TV, or God help us if you're watching it on your laptop, but or your phone. Oh, right. My God. This is what I call, in a kind way, a deliberately paced movie. Chloe Zhao, if you've seen her films in the past, is one of those directors that takes her time in developing a story. And this is that. And when I saw it right at the Toronto Film Festival, which was virtual, so I'm watching it. Fortunately, I know how to cast these things, these links and things up to my big screen TV. So at least I can watch it like that. But often when they send you movies, if you're a critic and things, they've got your name emblazoned in the middle of it so that you don't, you know, pirate it. But I watched it and I just kept getting distracted, and it's the kind of movie that just does not play well in that environment. I watched it again. They had their 95th premiere. They kept premiering this movie since last September at Venice. They had premiered this movie consistently to keep it alive until finally opening it in February. I watched it again, and I had a different attitude going in, and I actually quite liked it. You know, I was able to pay attention to it and sort of see what it would have been like in a theater, but this movie needed a theater, and it's a shame, actually. They were playing this movie on IMAX screens, where they could find IMAX screens open, because it's a gorgeous looking film. It's going to win cinematography. And, you know, you have to pay attention and you have to get into it. And I know Academy members who tell me, oh, it's so boring or whatever. One former president of the Academy told me that it took her 6 hours to get through it. So, you know, there are those people that, you know, watching it as we are on TV and things, I think it takes a toll, because it's a much better movie than to deserve this kind of thing. And it's, theaters are now reopening in LA. They just did this week with a limited capacity, and New York City. And those are the big markets. And so I think it's slowly coming back, but you're going to have to judge these movies in the way we saw them this year. And that's where your asterisk is coming in. It's not the movies. It's how we're watching them.
Right.
That is going to kind of say, well, would this have won maybe in a normal year where you have to see these in theaters, where the Academy's beautiful theaters were even open for their members and things, would that have made a difference? And I don't know.
The film's Chloe Zhao, already the first Chinese woman nominated as Best Director, owns another piece of Oscar history.
She's up for editing, film editing. She's her own film editor. So that's where you get the four. In addition to being one of the producers for Best Picture, she's got the directing and screenplay nomination. So yeah, she's done what very few people have done in a single year to get four nominations. Certainly for a woman, it's unprecedented, but it's been done twice by Warren Beatty. For Reds for Heaven Can Wait. But okay. He was in the Best Actor category, and then also picture director, writer.
I didn't know if Woody Allen, maybe. I wasn't sure. But Woody Allen doesn't get acting usually, right?
Woody Allen did it no, he didn't do it, actually. He was up for three, because he didn't produce Annie Hall.
Okay.
So, So it's generally three. There's a lot of those. But four is rarefied territory here, and she has a very good chance of winning three of those.
Does politics at all? Sometimes it plays. And right now, current events, and there's such an anti-Asian American sentiment. Does that weigh into voters' minds?
You know, who knows what lurks? I mean, the truth of the matter is, there are only X amount of people voting, and they're voting now in terms of what's going to win. They get the nominations the same time we do. Now, if you are a member of the Academy in the acting branch, and you wake up today and you read the news about the murders in Atlanta, you might think differently. You might look at a story like Minari and say, you know what, maybe I was going to vote for Mank, maybe I was going to vote for the father, but you know, I feel like, you know, voting for a movie is a political act to some, so maybe that puts it in the category. I mean, I don't know. It's funny. It's sort of a philosophical thing. You know, how do you choose what's the best movie? I mean, you can't, right? There's no winner. The winner is a race. You know, you watch two people and one guy crosses the finish line first. That's the winner. You know, the Olympics, for all of the injustice that goes on there, at least once the games start, you know who the winner is, you know who the loser is.
Right. Right.
You know, just because I think Mank's a stinker. I have friends that love Mank, you know, so they're not wrong. I can't argue with that. So, but your question was, do current events play into people's voting? It's possible. I mean, who knows? If you were a voter and it's, you know, I mean, people vote for their friends also. That's the other thing. Like lead actress, you know, I said Carrie Mulligan's likely to win. Okay, but she's up against Viola Davis. Viola Davis has been in the biz for a long time. A lot of people have worked with her. If you knew Viola Davis personally, you knew how great she was. And let's say she bought you dinner one time. You're like, I'm voting for Viola. I love her, you know?
Right.
Human nature.
Right.
Of course, what would the Oscar nominations be without a few snubs? So I asked both men, who was wrongly left off the list?
Delroy Lindo is great in The Five Bloods. He's kind of the main guy. He's a Vietnam vet, Trump supporter, just bursting with PTSD. And Delroy Lindo acts his brains out in this. And it is weird that he wasn't nominated. And I think Gary Oldman should look in the mirror and he should publicly apologize for stealing Delroy Lindo's nomination because he doesn't belong on that list for Mank.
I would have loved to have seen, like I said, Sophia Loren, Michelle Pfeiffer, Bill Murray was wonderful. It shows how difficult it is with comedy right now, you know, to break through. Although Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, got his movie got a nomination for Maria Bakalova, and that's pure comedy. And things, but that's rare that, you know, if they have a chance to go dramatic, they will. I thought Bill Murray was great and On the Rocks. It got no recognition at all. It should have. I don't know what happened there.
By contrast,
that was the biggest single surprise of this year's nominations, without question, that these first time ever two black actors from the same movie got nominated in the same category and against each other. And that Lakeith Stanfield, I'm on Gold Derby. I go, you know, I make predictions and things. They have a drop down menu. You couldn't even vote for Lakeith Stanfield in supporting because he wasn't on our drop down menu, you know, because they bought into that he was a lead actor. That happens every now and then. It happened with Kate Winslet for The Reader. They had promoted her for supporting. She got nominated for lead actress and won.
I think Daniel Kaluuya would have won, but they put him up against Lakeith Stanfield, who plays the main character in Judas and the Black Messiah. And he is the lead actor. The character's name is William O'Neill. And it's William O'Neill is like 51% the main actor, but they're both kind of lead. They put them both in supporting. This is like the one sort of controversial thing. They kind of knocked Lakeith down to supporting. So now you have Lakeith and Daniel in the same movie. And I think that they're going to knock each other out and Sacha Baron Cohen is going to win.
That's for the trial of the Chicago 7. We shall see. The Oscars are April 25th. My thanks again to Pete Hammond of Deadline.com and Jordan Hoffman of Vanity Fair and other publications. Join my Patreon page to help the podcast grow. Please share this episode on social media. You can contact me on Twitter @JerryBarmash, email hearnowthenewsjb@gmail.com, and like my Hear Now the News Facebook page. Thanks for listening. I'm Jerry Barnash.